May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Amen. As I travel around both in this country and in Europe, I'm often intrigued to run across a church named after an unusual saint. Even within our own diocese, there are lots of St. John's and St. Peter's and St. Paul's and St. Mark's. The most common church name in England and the USA is St. Mary's. Some churches just opt for all saints, covering all the bases, as it were. But then you start to wonder, who was St. Botolph, or St. Agnes, or St. Ninian? Most of us have no idea. So the Feast of All Saints, celebrated on November 1st or the nearest Sunday afterward, which is today, is set aside to remember and commend all the saints of God, those we know and those we don't, especially those who are not recognized at other points in the church here. There are a few saints who actually have their own holy days in the church calendar. The apostles, the evangelists, Mary the Virgin, John the Baptist, Stephen, Joseph, Mary Magdalene, Michael and all angels, and James of Jerusalem. Those of you who attended the All Saints service on Monday heard Father Michael explain that the Episcopal Church publication, A Great Cloud of Witnesses, identifies a larger group of what it calls those who have inspired and challenged us from the time of the New Testament to the present. These individuals shine forth Christ to the world. And in doing so, they serve as examples to us as we, in turn, strive to imitate Christ as well. At St. John's, we commemorate them in our virtual weekday evening prayer. Over time, All Saints became the day for general commemoration of the dead. All Christians, past and present, all saints, known and unknown. Because of the day's association with the remembrance for the dead, we read a necrology, the names of the congregation's faithful departed, with prayers on their behalf. And you'll hear that later. Actually, that is probably more appropriately done on the next day, All Souls Day, which is the day to commemorate not the saints that we don't really know, but the faithful departed whom we do know, because they are our loved ones. But I digress. The hymns we sing on All Saints are joyful and celebratory. We just sang one or two. They're about rest, fellowship, and continued joyful service to God. And in our closing hymn today, we'll hear the saints characterized as those of dazzling brightness, those in God's own truth arrayed, clad in robes of purest whiteness, robes whose luster ne'er shall fade. Or in the lovely words of the reading from the Revelation to John, these are they who have come out of the great ordeal. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. They will hunger no more and thirst no more. The sun will not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to the springs of the water of life, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. So how do you define a saint? Would you know one if you met one? The Episcopal Church requires of its saints evidence of heroic faith, love, goodness of life, service to others for Christ's sake, and devotion. So, here's an interesting definition. A saint is a dead sinner, revised and edited. This comes from the early 20th century satirist Ambrose Bierce in his 1906 work, The Cynic's Word Book. Saints have complex lives, just like we do. Mother Teresa of Calcutta is a well-known example. She told her spiritual director that she spent most of the years of her ministry in deep doubt, including about the existence of God. Just a few months before she won the Nobel Prize, she wrote, "The silence and emptiness is so great that I look and do not see, listen and do not hear." We have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. What makes someone a saint is not that they are holy, but that God is holy. Every one of us in baptism is buried with Christ in his death to rise with him in resurrection. We are all called to be dead to sin and alive to God. We are all called to be saints, dead sinners revised and edited by the redemptive sacrifice of Jesus. Our gospel reading today is a passage known as the Beatitudes, which comes from the Latin beatus, meaning blessed. Matthew's Beatitudes begin the Sermon on the Mount, and there's a similar passage in Luke's gospel known as the Sermon on the Plain. Here, Jesus has a vast crowd gathered about him, hungry for a word. He goes up the mountain, as he frequently does when he's in need of some one-on-one time with God. His disciples come to him, and he sits down, assuming a typical rabbinic posture of teaching. He's going to impart some wisdom to them. What Jesus is imparting is words of hope, guidance, and most importantly, comfort to those who suffer. Those whose spirits are broken, who mourn, who lack power, who are not aggressive, who are kind and are persecuted for it. These are the ones who will be rewarded. In a culture not unlike our own that celebrated wealth, success, and military might, Jesus lifted up those on the opposite end of the spectrum as blessed, not because they were particularly happy or esteemed or without troubles, but because in some profound way, God is near to them. But he also reminds his disciples that being blessed, being chosen, carries painful responsibility. But even when your commitment to God's kingdom is costly, you may rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. I just finished reading Presiding Bishop Michael Curry's book, Love is the Way. Bishop Michael always has a lot to say about love. It is, for him, quite simply, the core of our faith. Love of God and love of neighbor are what drive our spiritual lives, our worship, and our outreach to the community and the world. We are all God's beloved children. And by the way, all does mean all. Jesus reminds us of this throughout the Gospels. Paul repeats it constantly. And here again, in the reading from the Revelation, the great multitude is described as being from every nation, from all tribes and people and languages. And Bishop Michael describes the Beatitudes as Jesus teaching the way of love. Over the past many months, our world has been turned upside down. That has meant immense suffering, loss, and struggle for millions of people. The world has become strange, unfamiliar, and even frightening. But perhaps, while we're in this space of upheaval, disruption, and disorder, we can begin to see our reality from a different perspective. The Beatitudes are a reminder that the world as we have generally encountered it is not the world that God intends or desires for us. And the Beatitudes are not about standing on the sidelines waiting for God to clean things up. We have an opportunity now to think about how we can begin the work of making a new and better world, one that is right side up in God's eyes. We know that we are called to serve Christ by serving others, loving God and loving our neighbors as ourselves. We don't do any of these actions in order to earn or deserve God's grace and love, which have already been given to us freely. Instead, we love our neighbors as ourselves in response to that love, expecting nothing in return, as God has given us everything. Because you are blessed, Jesus says, you are free to acknowledge without shame the poverty of your spirit and your need for God. Your sadness over your own brokenness and the brokenness of the world. And your need and willingness to be led by God. Because you are blessed, you may pursue your hunger and thirst for things to be made right. You may show kindness and compassion toward the marginalized and the excluded. You may risk those things which make for peace. And this is the way of love, the way the saints have walked, the way that we must walk if we wish truly to follow Jesus.